So welcome back to CFRU. Now, Rosalie, how are you doing today?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, welcome very much to CFRU here in Guelph. And I've given you, I've given you an introduction already and spoken a bit about your life and some of the organizations you founded and been involved with. So maybe we should begin with talking about something that's definitely in the news a lot, like you mentioned, the hurricane in New Orleans. And maybe we can jump right into talking about the military's manipulation of the weather, because I know that's a lot of people don't know that much about it, and I wonder if you give us an introduction to how that is possible, and maybe talk about what's going on today in that context.
Well, I think you have to go back to the Vietnam War to really understand what's going on. There were two projects during the war. Really, the first time that there was an attempt to manipulate weather for an advantage. One of the projects had to do with trying to destroy the ozone layer over Vietnam so that things would happen, like their crops would burn and people would get skin cancer and so on. So that was one project. And the other project was called Storm Fury, and the idea was to try to add energy to a storm that was already there, like a monsoon, and make it more destructive, put more energy into it so that it would do more damage. These were less than successful, and after the war, the funding was stopped for the program. However, a few years ago, they were all refunded. And in the publication by the Pentagon called 2020, the military has now indicated that they expect to control weather for military purposes by the year 2025. So we're now in an experimental period where they are trying to enhance storms and experiment with the ionosphere to see what happens down below on Earth. So it's, to me, very scary. It's scary that you could manipulate it for war purposes, but it's even more scary that they're just trying things and to see what will happen.
Yeah, it's extremely scary to think that people, like scientists operating under a very mechanistic view of the world can try to think they know what they're doing with such a dynamic, constantly fluctuating ecosystem.
Well, this planet is our home. It's not a military device to be manipulated.
Can you maybe explain for us how the ionosphere can be manipulated to alter weather patterns?
Well, we have five layers above the Earth. They're layers of air, but there's some very important things in these layers. People are probably aware of two of them, the ozone layer, which screens out harmful rays from the sun, and the jet stream, which is on our weather report every night, and which very much controls our weather. But there are other things up there. For example, there are five large vapor rivers in the northern hemisphere and another five in the southern hemisphere. These are really can be seen from satellite, and they manage to move the moisture from the tropics up to the northern hemisphere or down to the southern hemisphere, and they're really, you know, a lot of water concentrated in a layer of air, and they constantly circulate, so they can be moved over land, and if they move over land, they can cause flooding. They can also be moved away from the land and cause drought. Then up above that, if you go up to the highest, the fifth level, there is an electrojet. This is actually electricity, direct current electricity, and the amount of electricity up there is greater than all the electric grids on Earth. And that can touch down on Earth and blow out a grid. So there are many ways that an instrument like HARP, which is able to concentrate radio waves into an area of the ionosphere, can move around these natural resources up there that are, you know, that farmers depend on and people depend on, and make massive changes in our weather.
Do you think that it's been used already to the extent that it's that it's a contributing role in Hurricane Katrina, for example, or the recent tsunami in December?
Well, I was suspicious at Hurricane Mitch that hit Guatemala. And I found some scientific papers that showed when both the HARP, which is in Alaska, and another center, which is in Antarctica, and also has an ionospheric heater, when they both are deployed, the effect of it is in the Caribbean. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if they had something to do with the ferocity of the Katrina. I think that the storm would have occurred, but it might not have been as forceful. Mm-hmm. And a colleague of mine checked the Alaska HARP facility and found that it had been operating at a higher degree of power just the day before the storm hit. And now, you know, that's circumstantial evidence. It doesn't really prove anything, but it's very worrisome.
Yeah, it is. I'm wondering, in your book, Planet Earth, you had a nice graph of the number of earthquakes per year, and you showed how in the latter half of the 20th century, there's actually twice as many earthquakes per year than there were in the first half of the 20th century. Can you maybe talk a bit about that and explain the connections between the ionosphere and the, I guess, the energy beneath the Earth?
Well, earthquakes occur on all different magnitudes. So if you just look at the ones above a magnitude of 6 on the Richter scale, you'll find that over time, the ones in the range of 7, which is a pretty good-sized earthquake, have been increasing dramatically. They've doubled in just the last half of the 20th century. Now, we think some of those were caused by nuclear weapon testing, but that doesn't account for the increase, which still continues after the nuclear weapon testing has ceased. So there are certainly other things going on the planet that have increased that number. And I would say the greatest possibility would go to the backlash from the HARP and other like ionospheric heaters. You see, they train rays up to the ionosphere, and some of them reflect back on the Earth, and these are the very low frequencies that can go right through the center of the Earth. And again, if an earthquake is pending or doesn't need very much to start it, it can start an earthquake. So I think this kind of experimentation with our life support system is outrageous.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, I'm assuming that the technology used in HARP and the ionospheric heaters can be applied to a wide variety of electromagnetic warfare. And I wonder if you know about different ways that electromagnetic frequencies have been or are being developed as weapons.
Well, there's a lot of things they can do. They could wipe out all communications in a country. What they call, a military calls, making it blind. They could wipe out satellites that are up there, as well as any kind of ground communication. Anything that's electronic can be blinded. So there are these rays that are the back ray from hitting the ionosphere can also go through people and have medical effects, because our bodies are wired and they have electrical impulses, so it can disturb things like heart rhythm or respiratory rate or something like that. They could interfere with the brain.
Mm-hmm.
We have not been able to document this yet, but it's clearly a possibility.
Yeah. I remember in the book Angels Don't Play This Harp,
mm-hmm.
I was talking about harp, where they talked about how it's not completely proven, but the technology or the possibility does exist to have these kind of electromagnetic waves affect thought patterns and like what actually goes on in people's brains.
Well, our bodies operate the electrical signals at a very at a certain specific rate, and so if they mimic those signals, they can cause the body to react.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wondering. There's a bunch of stuff I'd like to talk to you about. Maybe can you also link this into like the military wishes to dominate the entire planet and the ecosystem? How does this extend to the military's quest for control into space?
Well, there are now space is an integral part of the American military organization, so they have a space control. And they have been quite blunt about their purpose, which is to dominate space. And their listed goals are to protect American investments overseas and all around the world. So it's not the American people that are being protected. It's
mm-hmm.
it's money. It's money and financial transactions all over the world.
Yeah.
So they want to dominate space. They consider space the place of the next war, which is, you know, pretty crazy, because whatever is up there comes down on us, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. On the topic of weather warfare, there's something that I have difficulty finding information about, and that's chemtrails. And I was wondering what kind of information you have on their existence and their use.
Many people have noticed that what was ordinarily a short-lived trail from a jet-propelled engine in there, it normally lasted about 15 seconds, but these are now seen to persist. They also make big X's over our cities, or grids, and or parallel lines. So you can see it as something very unusual. And the trail lasts for an hour or more. If you take a good look at it, you'll see that it's dripping something. It gets wider, and there are places where you can actually see something dripping out of it.
Mm.
These are military chemtrails, chem for chemistry. They're basically the delivery system for chemical warfare. However, they're being used now, I think, partly for practicing, but also to put out things that will reduce the problem of global warming. So if they put out some metals, they can reflect the sun's rays upward and away from the planet. Again, it's not the right way to solve that problem, and it's interfering with our air, which we have to breathe. So I think it's pretty dangerous technology.
Yeah. I just was reminded, actually, of an experience I had several, about 4 or 5 years ago, working out in the country, and an unmarked green plane flew quite low overhead, trailing a plume of smoke, and it was something I didn't really think much about, and until my mom said that she met a man who was a physiologist of some kind. He's been documenting unmarked green military planes flying overhead, and he says that within the week following sightings of these planes, people came into him reporting horrible migraines and other such effects. So thank you for kind of clearing that up, because I haven't really thought much about it, but it makes a bit more sense now. I was wondering if I could ask you about a few more things. You know, it's clear that our economy cannot coexist, you know, with the ecology of the planet. And given the military and economic might of the industrial economies and, you know, the severe upsetting of the balance of our climate, how close do you think we are to climatic collapse, and what do you see for us in the future right now?
Well, you know, people have always worried about financial collapse, like we had in 1929. However, what seems to be facing us right now is a natural resource collapse. The most obvious point of this right now is oil. But water is also scarce, and we're overusing the resources of the earth that can be replenished. So right now, the whole earth is operating on a deficit budget, so that we're using up about 135 or 136% of what's available in terms of natural resources. Now, that means we're using up 36% of what really belongs to future generations. At the same time, we have a population growth which is increasing. So we're reducing the total natural resources of the planet while we increase the number of people that will have to use it. And so we're laying the groundwork right now for future wars over resources. And I think people need to take a look at what we're spending on military and military resources, because they're very consuming sector of society. I don't think we want to do away with transportation or education or hospitals or, you know, any of the other life-productive sectors of our economy, but we better take a hard look at war, because I don't think that from a resource point of view we can have any more wars. We're just destroying the planet, and we're destroying life for future generations.
Yeah, that brings me to another something else. I was wondering, what do you think are some of the most important things for people to be understanding today and for people to be doing about all this?
Well, I think people have to take a good look at what's called our ecological footprint, because we're building cities and we're taking land for suburbs that we need to grow food. And so your ecological footprint really is how much land you need to support the people that are living all in one place, like Guelph or Toronto or Hamilton, and how much land do they require in order to live, in order to survive. And we can't take all of our land for housing or all of our land even for waste disposal, for dumps. It's really crazy to take the resources that we need in order to support life.
Yeah, it goes pretty deep. How do you think we can get people in Western civilization to see beyond this anthropocentrism and our objectification of the natural world? Like, how can people work towards these much-needed shifts in perspective?
Well, first of all, I would compliment you because you're trying to wake people up. But people are going to have to dig it out because our media is doing a very poor job of telling us what's going on. And the constant idea that you can have unending economic growth is ridiculous. And yet it's a myth that all of our society is running on.
Mm-hmm. And you've been working, what kind of stuff have you done in your life? I talked a bit about a bit of your history, but I'd like to offer you a bit of space to talk about your work with the International, was it the Institute for International Concern for Public Health? And what kind of stuff?
I started working in research, medical research. And in doing that, I began to realize how important the environment is for health, how it impacts large communities when there's an environmental hazard. And I also began to realize that this is not easily reported on or recognized because there are so many financial problems connected with identifying a pollution. It's who's doing it and who's going to be responsible for all the health problems caused. And, you know, when we worked with bacteria, there was nobody standing out there saying, it's not my bacteria, or nobody worrying about how much they would have to pay out if we discovered what was causing polio or, you know, some other disease. So it's been very uphill work trying to protect the public health from the hazards of the military and industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, I really commend you for doing what you've been doing. I used to have a library at the University of Guelph, I understand.
Yes, that's been moved to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying the International Institute of Concern for Public Health is trying to get that into a usable and available environmental library.
Nice. I'd like to say a quote from you, actually, that I read in an interview, and just ask you for a few comments on that, because I think that I connected with it. And you said that if you really deal with all this at a deep level, it's painful. It's very painful, but that's where we're also most effective. And if we're willing to accept the reality as it is and say, this is our world and this is what we have done, this is what we have to live with, and this is what we have to try to make better, then I think you're healthier. And I wonder if you can talk about that, like after all you've been through and been a part of, how do you deal with the issues of pain and despair and empowerment, and can you offer any insights to the rest of us?
Well, I think it's like any addiction. We're addicted to using violence to get our way. And once you realize that, you have to bottom out like any alcoholic or drug addict. You have to admit that this is our culture and this is what we're doing. And then you can begin to heal and you can begin to learn other ways to deal with these problems. There are a lot more ways, options, and conflict resolution than just shooting the other person or going in with a tank to get your own way. So, you know, this is a whole society's problem. It's wanting an answer quickly and wanting to get one by physical dominance.
Yeah, I think those are some great points you made there. And I wonder, we've talked quite extensively about weather control and a lot of different things that it's really hard to find information about. And I wonder, on working towards a closing note, do you have anything else you'd like to say to people as far as like things you consider important to be on the lookout for or learning about now or thinking about?
Well, I tried to put all the basics of what's going on right now in the planet Earth, the latest weapon of war, which is available from the Black Rose Press in Montreal, or it's available at the International Institute of Concern for Public Health in Toronto. It's very important to get the word out, and it's very important for people to seek information and become well-informed yourself and then share that with others. You know, we're so bombarded with advertisements that I think word of mouth and person-to-person direct communication is the most important way to carry a message.
Thanks a lot, Rosalie. And I don't really have too much more to ask you. I really, really want to thank you for sharing all this information with us, because it's tough to find out what's going on out there, especially the more esoteric realms of, you know, weather manipulation and all of that.
Yeah, thank you for asking.
Yeah, thank you very kindly for educating yourself and educating us about what's going on. And I guess I don't really have too many more questions for you. I wanted to hear as much as I could about weather control, but from here on, I'd like to thank you for your closing words, and if you have anything else to say.
No, I think that's about it, but I really thank people for their interest and for the things that they are doing, and I think it's a time to stretch, and it's a time to do more.